Right. A caller says, why are we paying such high prices for food that's mostly below par? Food hadn't gone up that much. It's all greed and profit for the owners. I would be quite confident that restaurateurs in Donegal aren't... they're not making millions and gouging the public. I don't think that's the case. Ardra's biggest issue, says another listener, is the lack of a hotel. Another €30 for a main course is ridiculous. Some restaurants are adding the cost of a side to that. Sure, it's unrealistic to afford that on a regular basis. I've gone from eating out on a regular basis to eating out occasionally. We're out at the weekend and I'm not contradicting you, by the way. It's where you choose to go and I've seen those prices. But we went out for a treat at the weekend and I had three courses for €26 and it was lovely as well. So I suppose you can shop around. There is savings to be made. From my experience of having a family business, the government prefers to bring in foreign multinational businesses to supporting local businesses. This creates a loss of local jobs. Franchises are also a big issue. A local business can be killed with the cost of retrofitting and upkeeping to the style of a brand. All our main hotels are American-owned, along with companies like McDonald's and what have you. That man is correct. We need to shop local, support local farmers and markets, businesses, central control, and coming from government, which is in turn coming from the EU. Ultimate aim is 15-minute cities controlled by digital ID and cashless society, and it's not even a secret. Hi, Greg. People are not going out anymore because things are just too expensive. When you can go into Tesco's in Derry, 15 bottles of beer for €10 sterling, £10 sterling, and a bottle of wine for £7. Another, I think Stephen misses the point. If there were no industrial and economic centres like Letterkenny, there'd be a lot more rural immigration within a radius of 25 miles or more around it. Yes, but you see, it's all different types of jobs. There's lots of people who would like to work in Ardra or Carrigart or Fannad or Carndonagh and don't want to have to travel to Letterkenny. So if we have small and medium businesses that are successful and thriving there, then they can work there. Because it's not one size fits all. There's no point everybody going to college and walking out with a doctor's degree, a nurse's degree, and a degree in IT, because there are so many more important, highly skilled jobs that need to be done as well. You know, carpentry, block laying, working generally with concrete, you know, food preparation, and so on and so forth. So we need a diverse economy, and that leads to, you know, a diverse population location, I would think. But if you disagree, please get back in touch. Councillor Michael McClafferty was listening to our conversation with Mr. Stephen McCahill. Where do you lay the blame, Michael?
Well, Greg, the way I see things at the minute, all our Donegal TDs need to go together and they need to try and get this thrashed out in the Doyle. I mean, to date, to my knowledge, and I to date, and I stand to be corrected, but to my knowledge to date, Craig, I'm not aware of any one of them, irrespective of what party they're from, going into the Doyle and making a case for the people of Donegal along the N56. With a general election coming, it shouldn't come to us, but with a general election coming, it's all there to play for all candidates, all TDs there at the minute, and I would appeal to them all, the certain TDs currently where they're still sitting at the minute, to try and do what you can do to start representing the people of Donegal, represent the people of rural Ireland. We have a situation here, Greg, as Stephen quite categorically articulated there. I'm not going to go over everything he said, but the point is, like he did say, if you have a farm along the N56, you could have 50, 100 acres, as do some people, depending where they live along the N56, Greg. They can't get as much as a duck house on it. This is no good. This is the people that we need going forward for a job and so on. There's a new hospital getting built down below yourselves there now, Greg, at the minute. 18 months, 2 years' time, that's going to require a lot of staff. Where is the staff going to come from if we don't have houses, they can't get building? Maybe staff that are far away and far off lands, America, Australia, Canada, etc., might like to come home to work in that hospital, possibly if their jobs are offered to them. They can't do that because there's no accommodation for them. The whole thing's a mess. Like, mm-hmm. We have a health centre as well due to open shortly here now down the valley, which I welcome very much. But I'm afraid again the same thing may fall on deaf ears again. Accommodation is going to be a situation for the relevant people that's required to come there because they're intended to be multiple services in that health centre. The multiple services can only be there, Greg, if the people land, if there's accommodation for them, first of all.
I get you. You're at the council for every meeting, I'm sure, yes. Michael, either local or nationally. What are you guys doing to support businesses?
Well, Greg, like, what are you doing? We are trying to do our best, but we can
like
only do so much.
Like, what stuff
level.
Have you done?
We
what
can't
have you, we, yeah, but what have you done at council level to support businesses? Local small businesses?
Well, supporting business, and we're trying to support the business as best we can all the time, Greg, but at the end of the day, it falls back to what Stephen says. It's all down to people themselves, where they want to get the best deal. And this is unfortunately where the small businesses end up in trouble too. The cost.
Well, do small businesses come up for discussion much at the council meetings?
They do from time to time. To be mentioned from time to time. Yes, I mentioned them there the last year myself, albeit in a workshop. But I did mention them. I did mention them in a workshop format. Yeah, just a week ago alone, as to a couple of other councillors as well, wrote in behind me then too, that we do need to do what we can for small businesses, obviously, to keep them going as well. But the small businesses, Greg, is not going to survive anyway, if the population's not in the area. And if you can't get building houses in the area, firstly, if the council can't get building themselves houses in the area, or aren't building houses at the minute in the area, that's one aspect of it. The people then that may be in a position to build, possibly if they're able to acquire mortgages and so on, or possibly people that are away for a long time and have gathered up some money now and wish to come home, they can't get built either, Greg. And it's back to the same thing again. I'm sorry to keep repeating myself, but I do believe, Greg, unless they're Donegal PDs, and I'll take my hat off to the first one that does it, goes into the Doyle and says the words, M56 in Donegal, we can't get planning, until they start that debate. And it's not just Donegal, by the way, as well, Greg. It's all down along the West Coast. It's the Sligos, the Galways, the Mayos. Even now, the Kerry as well is affected.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, all these TDs need to go together, these rural TDs. At the end of the day, the constituents, the people in their respective counties, represent them elect them to represent the people, Greg. And I feel at the moment we're not being represented on the planning issue on the N56.
I get you.
For
all right, Councillor.
And sadly...
Yes, go ahead.
Sadly, it's just going to drive more and more people away, Greg, because they see no future here. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, if you're a young person yourself living in here now, if you couldn't get building a house, Greg, you know yourself what you'd do. You should tell me, I'm just going to head away with everybody else.
Yeah, but no one's going. But the thing is no one's going. Yeah, but no one's going to Australia to build houses or Dubai to build houses either. At the same time.
Well, Greg, we don't know that. There's many going away now, to be fair. To be fair, Greg, about it, when they have a number of years done, the ones that might be away there 10, 15 years, to be fair, and there's some of them around here at the moment looking to come back here at the moment to build houses. Like, I know...
Well, there's no doubt a big problem. There is a big problem in terms of that stuff. Okay, listen, always good to hear from you. Thank you very much indeed, Independent Councillor Michael McClafferty. I was in Letterkenny yesterday at the health and wellbeing event at the Radisson. I just want to say a big well done to all involved. It was a fantastic event, very informative. Can your caller explain how a VAT reduction benefits hospitality businesses? The understanding is that the customer paying their bill, which includes the VAT, which is then paid to the revenue by the business. Where is the cost or benefit to the business of a VAT reduction, as the customer is the one who pays it? And this same 13.5 VAT rate applies to many food and non-food products, which struggling households have to pay. Will they have this VAT reduced also? Well, I presume, and it's actually really quite a good question I should have asked. I presume that if you are charging for a curry €15 at 13.5%, the VAT rate is reduced to 9%, and you charge €15 for that curry, and you're paying less VAT, therefore there's more margin, quite a significant 4%, 4.5% extra margin on that food. I presume that's how it works. It's a good question, well phrased, but I presume that's how it works. The other big blow to Ardrahan and other towns is the death of Killybeg, says a listener, where there was work in the fishing and cutbacks, and also the fishery officer, fishery officials who... hound them, and where boats coming with fish stopped them coming, they say. After I got the COVID vaccine, I developed a cough, which led to a cardiac condition. I ended up having open heart surgery and a pacemaker fitted. Before I got the vaccine, I had no health issues. Hi, Greg. Fair play to you for broadcasting Larry's COVID vaccine inquiry story. It's heartbreaking to hear the devastating effect it had on him. I'm also aware of a number of individuals who have had serious adverse reactions to the vaccine internationally. Instances of cardiac conditions, myocarditis and pericarditis have massively increased. An independent peer-reviewed study of Scandinavian health workers indicated a direct link between these conditions and the jab. In that study, the vast majority of subjects found to have developed the condition felt no symptoms of the issue. Had they continued with activities like gym or running, they were at considerable risk of heart attack. Another, a recent study from the UK of children who've developed myocarditis and pericarditis found that 100% of these children presenting with the condition were vaccinated. 100%, close on 100% of children got the vaccine as well too, though. So you'd want them to dig down a little bit to figure all that out. Thanks for those. Greg, I heard on Highland News that the Cockhill Road in Buncrana will not be repaired or tarred until next year. Can I ask the council, why are we motorists paying car tax and NCT to drive on more or less a dirt track in this road? The explanation they have given as to why this took place is not much use to the motorists. The council need to get their act together and get this road fixed ASAP. A caller says, I was adopted and I was trying to find information regarding whether I was used for vaccination trials. I can't get any help. I can understand exactly where you're coming from. I wonder how clear the records might be to... It sounds to me like something they might try and cover up or conflate or confuse. I wonder how detailed that information is out there. In other words, no matter how long you searched, is that information there to be connected with you? You would hope so. I would want to know if that was the case. Please play a special request for John McAteer. He's 80 today. It comes in from your nephew Martin and all your nieces and nephews. He's a very important man and we always go to him for advice. And I met his puppy yesterday as well, 13-month-old. Glasser, I believe the dog's name is. Beautiful wee thing. Probably the best cared for dog in Donegal. I would be very surprised if there were better cared for than how John treats his little baby. And I'm joined in studio by Fiona McGowan, speech and language therapist, primary care, HSE, community services, Cavan, Donegal, Leitrim, Monaghan and Sligo. I'm just going to stick from now on with speech and language therapist. Is that okay?
Sounds good.
And how are you keeping? Thanks so much for calling up. I do appreciate it.
And thank you for having me, Greg.
Right. So there's a series of light up events taking place across the county on Friday, and it's to raise awareness about development language disorder. So should we talk about development language disorder?
Absolutely.
Is it a broad church?
So developmental language disorder, or DLD, is refers to difficulties with understanding and using spoken language. It is very common. Research will say that 1 in 14 children will have DLD. And so if we think about the average Irish classroom, that could be up to 2 children in every classroom that has DLD. It emerges in childhood, but it is a lifelong condition and so therefore it persists into adulthood. So it's given that it is so common, it's wonderful to be here to be able to shine a light on DLD, and that's what the light up events aim to do as well.
So when might it be clear that there is DLD?
So there will be early markers. So a child may be slow to talk. They may have limited vocabulary in the early years. They may have trouble understanding instructions. And so those may be picked up at home by parents or through the public health nurse, through the developmental checks. And then from then, they may be referred for assessment. After that, assessment takes that place over a period of time. So assessment involves things like a formal language assessment where a speech and language therapist will administer language tasks to measure a child's performance. But then information from the parents about the child's history, information from the preschool or the school will also be really important as part of the assessment. And then monitoring the child's progress over a period of time, because I suppose we're trying to establish whether these difficulties are persistent in nature to be able to diagnose DLD.
Yes, and indeed, whilst someone with a great deal of experience might be able to even internally make a determination, like some of the signs that you talked of, that's why you have the assessment, isn't it? Because they can be indicators, but not necessarily such a strong indication that you could make that determination there and then.
Absolutely.
So there's lots of variables. And there is a system there that's tried and tested to tick the boxes where necessary to make that determination.
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Because I suppose part of the assessment process as well is to rule out other conditions. So if the language difficulties are being caused by hearing impairment or things like that. So there is a period of time where assessment takes place.
I've gone through this a couple of times and I've never heard of DLD. Mm-hmm. I've heard of, you know, we'll check for autism or different types of things, right? Mm-hmm. Is that just my experience or is DLD just becoming more known about now?
So DLD, it's been referred to as different terminology down through the years. And I suppose since consensus has come together since 2017, that DLD is the term that we are using for children who have difficulties with understanding and using spoken language.
Have we used deferred speech in the past? Or is that something different? Delayed speech?
Delayed speech would have been used, language disorder or specific language impairment.
Understood.
Those kind of terms would have been used. So I think since the consensus has been founded, you know, that's when the awareness piece mm-hmm. has really started to kick off. You know, we have known from when language studies and brain studies were being done that language can develop differently for different
yeah.
people. So I think for the last, since 2017, the awareness piece has
Brilliant.
Really been built on every year. It is an International Awareness mm-hmm. Day. So across the country here in Ireland, but across the world, there will be light up events and lots of different events happening
Brilliant.
Within speech and language.
And that's also obviously to raise public awareness. Is there universal awareness among speech and language therapists to look for DLD, to look for the signs, to perhaps make referrals for assessment in this regard as well? Is that universal? Is that a universal experience for parents who are engaging with speech and language therapists?
Yes, so speech and language therapists are trained to be aware of the markers for DLD. They are trained to carry out the assessments and they are trained to make the diagnosis. Different speech and language therapists work in different areas mm-hmm. And different client groups. So say within a primary care where I work, DLD is quite common within the client group that I would work with. Yeah.
And in terms of helping children, mm-hmm. Is it similar to how you might help develop language with other causes, or is it specific or what?
So in terms of treating DLD, it's important to say that a child's needs will vary over time.
Of course, yeah.
Given that it is a persistent lifelong condition. So treatment will involve direct therapy, maybe with a clinician, whereby the child's language difficulties are addressed by individualised language programmes.
Mm-hmm.
Therapy can be provided through language programmes delivered by school and parents. And then there's often ongoing collaboration
yeah.
with other professionals involved with the child as well.
I know you mentioned, and I want to talk a bit more about it in a second, that DLD then can persist into school years and into mm-hmm. adulthood, right? But like, what's our success rate? What's our success rate like? I'm not looking for a figure, of course.
Mm-hmm.
How effective are the therapies? Say, for instance, it's identified in a 2, 3, 4 year old. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure when a diagnosis might be made. But like, is the exception that you may have it into adulthood, or is that the rule? Do you know what I mean? So can people sort of by the age 5, 6, 7, with exercises or therapies or whatever, catch up or, mm-hmm. or improve their language significantly?
That's a really good question.
What a really long question. I'm sorry.
That's
about
a really
that.
Good question, because I suppose DLD is persistent, it is lifelong. So therapy aims to maximise the potential of the child,
mm-hmm.
and the children tend to make lovely gains within therapy, but that underlying difficulty will persist. What we're trying to say is that therapy will lessen the impact
mm-hmm.
off the difficulty within the classroom or within the workplace, within your community and at home, trying to communicate your wants and your needs and being able to engage in stories and conversations with your family and friends.
And DLD, is it always about output or is it input as well?
So it's about understanding and use.
Okay.
So, you know, a person with DLD might show difficulties in a slower processing of information.
Mm-hmm.
So it might just take them a bit longer to take in what you're saying.
Mm.
There might be differences in understanding the language within instructions.
Mm-hmm.
So concepts over, under, in front, behind, what do those mean? for a child with DLD, it might be tricky for them to understand it. Then things like following stories and conversations. And then from the output, and we talk about expressive language, so that's the use of language. We talk about vocabulary. So the words that they're using, is it more limited than their non-DLD peers? Then their sentences might feel or sound a little bit muddled up, and their stories might sound a little bit muddled
yeah.
up as well.
So then, and I'm sort of thinking maybe, because often it's parents listening with an 8, 9, 10, mm-hmm. 11, 12-year-old, right, without diagnoses.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no typical, everyone's individual and yeah. present in a different way, but what likely might you be seeing in the home that might make you say, right, okay, well, maybe this could be a development language disorder. So what mm-hmm. what might a 10-year-old, let's use a 10-year-old, what
yeah.
if the 10-year-old hasn't been diagnosed, what might mum or dad see in the mm-hmm. house that would sort of go, right, maybe this is worth mm-hmm. Inquiring about?
Yeah, it might be things like the parents feel that they have to break down instructions a lot more frequently than maybe for other
so
siblings.
So would it be something like, right, go into the room, get your shoes and put them on, please. And you can get into the room, mm-hmm. but at that
you
point...
You might forget the shoes.
It wouldn't be a forgetfulness,
yeah.
but they just might start playing with the car
yeah.
instead of actually putting yeah. the shoes yeah. on. Could that be in it? And now that could be a million things, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But it could be something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's retaining the verbal information that you've been given. And yeah, so following instructions. So can you go upstairs? Can you go to the second drawer and get the red socks?
Get
you. That yeah. might be tricky for someone with uh-huh. DLD. Then I suppose in terms of, how they're doing at school, you might read them a story. It might be hard for them to understand what was the content of mm-hmm. those story and answer the questions about the story. It might be difficult for them to relay what happened that day at mm-hmm. school. They might get words mixed up. They might use TV instead of computer. So there will be both possibly understanding difficulties mm-hmm. and then spoken difficulties.
And outside of the language disorder itself, if the right therapy is given, the right support is given. I mean, I'm sure they are right now as we're speaking. Children can go on to be experts in many different fields mm-hmm. and what have you, can't they? Mm-hmm. You know? So that's it's not a prohibitor in that regard, mm-hmm. but it's really then important that we get the correct diagnosis. So our sports and education are there was a wave of adults, and it continues now, where awareness of other conditions like and I'm not conflating, right, but say attention deficit disorder mm-hmm. and what have you, late diagnosis mm-hmm. in their 20s or 30s mm-hmm. right, and then everything began to make sense
mm-hmm.
given the fact that we're relatively recently aware of DLD 2017 mm-hmm. on, do you anticipate that now with adults as well, whereby there will be people going, right, things are beginning to make sense mm-hmm. now, it was DLD
mm-hmm. potentially. I suppose DLD, it can be very subtle mm-hmm. for some people, so it may not have been picked up. And it's not uncommon for teenagers and adolescents to be diagnosed with DLD. At the moment, to my understanding, there are no particular assessments that are able to assess adults for DLD at the moment. But mm-hmm. that is definitely something that is.
What often when we speak to them, Fiona, what they reflect on is that I was seen as distractive, mm-hmm. distracted in school, mm-hmm. or I wasn't engaging, or I was mm-hmm. not interested. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and then if you can retrospectively say, right, it was DLD, a lot starts to make sense.
Absolutely.
Because people search for these answers for a long time, and it's very beneficial to them.
Mm-hmm.
So, right, we're going to talk about the awareness in a second, but there's another mm-hmm. couple of questions I had in relation to development, language disorder. Yes, frustration. Mm-hmm. Do the children, again, not generalising, generally speaking, I've just generalised with the question, kids with DLD, do they be frustrated at the communication issues?
They can be, absolutely.
But it's not universal.
Yeah. Okay. Every child has their own individual temperament and things and coping strategies mm-hmm. as well. But indeed, it can create frustration. And then I suppose some children may present with maybe some mildly challenging behaviours, and behaviour is communication. Mm-hmm. So it can be frustrating for children with DLD when, I suppose, the idea that the child has the same thoughts and ideas and emotions as their non-DLD peers, but they just don't have as many language skills okay. to be able to communicate them.
Right, so let's cast the net as wide as is possible as you can with things like this. So, you know, at what age might a parent notice that development language disorder may be present? You know, what are indicators which may or may not be present and may or may not end up leading to a development language disorder such as the diversity of our children, right? Mm. So, you know, what age would should a parent take notice, from, if you get where I'm coming from, typically, and what should they be looking out for?
So I suppose it depends on the age of the child. In the early years, you know, at age two, if you feel that your children don't have the same number of words that they should have to, within typical development, then that might be an indicator. So, for example, first words tend to emerge at 12 months, 6 to 10 words at 18 months, and starting to put words together at 2 years. So two words together at 2 years of age. Later on, in maybe preschool years, it might be where they're struggling to follow instructions.
As we outlined, yeah.
So that might be an indicator for parents to think, oh, there might be something different here in terms of the way my child is understanding and using language. Then at school age, and diagnosis can happen and referral can happen at school age as well, it might be through liaison with the teacher, and it can become more highlighted at that school age because the demands of the academic setting is much higher in terms
presumably
of language.
Presumably other imbalances are sort of expected to have levelled up at that point, aren't they? So you might not have someone speaks two words at two.
Exactly, yeah.
But by the time they all get to five or six, you would expect there's a commonality there to some extent.
Yes, exactly, okay. Yeah.
Can you regress? So can a child meet the expectations, you know, the milestones, whatever it is, the targets, and then sort of regress, you know, because there are some other conditions whereby, you know, there can be a little bit of regression in speech or generally speaking, does it begin and maintain?
Mm. So I suppose research will say that children will develop language. So, you know, children with DLD will develop language. The difficulties will persist, but they will develop language. So, you know, they are maybe developing their expressive language.
They'll find a way to meet their needs.
Absolutely, yeah. So, and, you know, they can make lovely progress with therapy, and that will support their functioning within all the environments that they're living in. But I suppose that persistent underlying difficulty does persist.
And I suppose, too, when we talk about awareness, we can get very frustrated. We can get very impatient with children or adults as well. And we can put it down to whatever it likes. But I think often what happens is we just get frustrated ourselves and we don't give a crap what's wrong with the other person or what, you know, accommodation we can make for them. But it's like an awful lot of things. It's just to think what the other person may be experiencing or going through. Do you know what I mean? Which means that even general conversation, give people a bit of space. You know, communicate as clearly as possible as you can. If you feel someone is having difficulty, you know, consider that maybe you could change your behaviour to make their life a bit better and not expect the reverse.
Absolutely, yeah.
And also too, which I should probably do more on this programme, is allow plenty of time for a person to respond.
Absolutely. And I think that works both ways. So allowing plenty of time for the person to respond because they will need that time to formulate their thoughts and ideas. And then allow plenty of time for the person to process what you're saying as well. And then using things like visuals and written text to support what you're saying, because that'll help the person to understand the spoken message. And then the other strategy is checking for understanding. So when you have maybe given an instruction to a child, get them to repeat it back to you so that you can identify, oh, we need to use simpler words for that instruction. We need to repeat it. We need to maybe rephrase it. And check for understanding. So those are very practical strategies that you can use within all your interactions to help support children and young people with DLD.
Right. So the Day of Awareness, Friday, October 18th, which is this coming Friday, isn't it?
It is tomorrow. Yeah.
And it's about raising awareness about development language disorder, which we're doing right now. What else is going to be going on?
So as we talked about, the light up events are happening within Letterkenny and across the county. The public services buildings within the county are going to be lit in purple. Other landmarks across the country will be also lit. So, for example, last year, the Convention Centre in Dublin was lit in purple. Niagara Falls has been lit in purple down through the years as well.
Well, we don't have to do anything.
Highland Radio is
ready to go.
DLD friendly.
Yes, of course.
So other things that are happening tomorrow, the speech and language therapists across the county will be wearing purple to raise awareness within our HSE settings. Also the speech and language therapy teams across the county are engaging in professional development tomorrow with a focus on further developing our skills with assessment and diagnosis of DLD. things like posters. We've developed some posters that are going to be displayed mm-hmm. in waiting areas and staff communal areas. The other piece that we've done is to disseminate that poster to other health professionals that could well be working with children and adults with DLD. Yeah.
I think anyone who's in contact with children, mm-hmm. Mums, dads, caregivers, mm-hmm. NINRAs, you know, schools, even speech and language therapists, are we refresher just to say, right, you know, let's have a bit of awareness about this.
Yeah.
There's also a lot of resources online for the very people I've just been mentioning.
Yeah.
RADLD.org.
Yeah.
It's resources on how to support people with DLD at school and work.
Absolutely. And they have very specific documents aimed at different environments and on how to support.
All right. Anything else you think worth mentioning?
Well, I have a poem.
Oh, lovely. Okay, so frame it for us before you just don't go straight into it.
Yeah, absolutely. As part of the Awareness Day last year, the RADLD organisation posted this poem on the website, and it was written by two children from Cork, their twins and their mum, and both children have DLD. And when I read it, it really struck me because it is a lovely insight into what it's like to live with DLD as a child. So it's not too long. So if that's okay, I might read it.
Whenever you're ready.
Okay. What About DLD? And it's by Nadine, Tony and Tommy Dalton. And it was taken from the RADLD website. What About DLD? Please take the time to listen to me as I have to take my time to listen to you. My brain works differently, but that's what makes me special. I can get quite tired from all of this, but I won't give up. DLD, why can't you see me? I long for your help as I am able. I am capable, just give me time and I will be fine. DLD, why can't you see me? I may make you feel like a parrot from time to time, but understanding and patience is the key for me. My emotions can get quite mixed, for there are times I cannot think, but I am not lazy, I am trying my best. DLD, why can't you see me? Don't leave me out, for I have a lot to give. In my head, I have a lot to say, but explaining it is hard in every way. I would like to be your friend if you could just understand my ways. DLD, why can't you see me? I now know I am not alone. My voice matters. I matter.
Lovely stuff. What a nice note to finish on. And that was written by two children with
mom.
DLD
yes.
And the mum. Okay,
yeah.
Very good. I think that paints quite a picture.
Mm-hmm.
Fiona McGowan, speech and language. Is this your first radio interview, no?
It is, yeah.
Oh, you did well. Very good. Excellent. Brilliant. Fiona McGowan, speech and language therapist, primary care, HSE community services, Cavan, Donegal, Leitrim, Monaghan and Sligo.
Thank
you so much for calling in. Really do appreciate it. And just a resource for you. And I think like any of these things as parents, caregivers, it's not to be alarmed or worried or think, oh, what about it? It's just to get information to to get assistance where it's needed. Because it could be that. It could be other stuff. It could be nothing. But you'll never know unless you get the information and find out and give young people the best chance they have to maximise their abilities. Go to RADLD.org for more resources on how to support people with DLD at work and at school. Now, Ireland's music and storytelling is cherished and celebrated worldwide. Traditional songs have captured the heartbreak, treachery, eviction, rebellion, emigration, murder, loss, longing, as well as drinking, revelry and hilarity in spaces. Many of these songs have never been recorded and are in danger in being lost over time. But an Irish musician has made it her mission to preserve songs associated with every county on the island of Ireland before they get forgotten forever. And that musician is Cathy Jordan. And Cathy is with me now. Good morning, Cathy.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm fantastic. What a huge piece of work you've undertaken, but incredibly important. Maybe not for us right now, although it is, but certainly for the generations to come.
Well, yeah, I look at it as a kind of a legacy project, a kind of a social archive of the country. And with all those different song types in there, it deals with all those subjects that our ancestors have dealt with and we deal with ourselves. So the oldest song on the project dates back to the 1600s. And they come right up to the modern day. There's two actually newly composed songs there, one from John Spillane and one from myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the centuries in between are represented. But the cool thing about it is I got I worked with about 50 musicians on the project from around the country, but then another 20 artists or so to illustrate the songs using a storytelling device that's been long forgotten in Europe and kind of made a resurgence in America in the last decade or so. And these are called cranky boxes, which are boxes that can be small as a matchbox or as big as a, you know, a house if you want. And the inside are scrolls, and you crank, you turn a cog, and the scroll comes from one side to the other and across the viewing screen to depict the song. So they could be as long as the song, you know, if the song is 3 verses, it might be 6 meters. Or if the song is 10 verses, it could be 12, 15 meters long. So a lot of work has gone into the music and the art, and the two complement each other beautifully, and they're all available now to see on the crankyisland.com website.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that. You know, all the things I've talked of earlier, the emotions, the experience, the loss, the longing, we capture an awful lot of that now through, you know, live calls, you know, photographs, videos. How important of a window into the past and capturing our ancestors' experience was sort of songs and poems?
Well, I think that they capture memories and they hold them safe and they can be accessed at any time, you know, in sing songs and, you know, and they're a safe place to view the past and to experience the feelings and the joys and experiences of our generations gone by. And I know myself, when I was a kid, we used to have sing songs, and I remember my father singing with his eyes closed and his head down, and, you know, I often wondered where he went to when he was singing them, and what memories they evoked for him. And they evoke memories for me as well. And I think they're a beautiful way to keep our history safe. And like the victors write the history books and the people write the songs, you know. So it's all real, real stories and real human emotion that's captured in the songs.
How did you come up with the Donegal song? What can you tell us about it and the story it tells and from what time period?
Well, of course, it's a true story and it goes all the way back to 1745. It's a song called Filleroon O, Return My Love. And it's through the eyes, the story is told through the eyes of a mother whose son has forsaken the Catholic priesthood for a ministry in the Protestant church, which was a fate worse than death, according to the mother. And she longed for him to return and be part of the family again, because it would be hard for her to take him back as a Protestant minister. So, you know, it's a very interesting insight into how we viewed things at the time.
And in choosing the songs, did the air or the music, the melody and the words have to be present? Or if you found the words, you interpreted the music because the words were so strong? Or how much latitude did you allow yourself in the process?
Well, I allowed myself a fair amount. I mean, in fairness, like, you could boil it down to just it's a project of songs that I really love. And in filling in the country and county by county, I tried to get as many song subjects as possible. So if I had too many immigration songs or of any type of song, I would look to a different type of song to that county and fill it in that way, but find ones I loved. And sometimes airs were slightly altered. I added choruses here and there. There was a bit of the folk process at work. You know, I researched songs in the archive.
It probably also continued the life of that work because, you know, probably very few were in their absolute original format. Over time, you know, art grows and develops. And just before we hear Filleroon O, How long have you been working on this? You talked about it being a legacy project, but even just to identify the 32 songs, let alone begin working on each individually and recording them and creating a visual project to be associated with each. So how long has this work been ongoing?
Well, I suppose I started at the beginning of lockdown in earnest, but I mean, the story goes back. I mean, I lived my life through songs, you know, from when I was a kid. So I've been collecting and, you know, recording songs, and I have lots in the stacked away in an archive of stuff that I've wanted to record. So this project was a way of showcasing a lot of those songs. And sometimes it was hard to find a county associated with so many songs have no county associated. And then so many songs that you might like mightn't be necessarily lend themselves to illustration. So there was a few of those battles to contend with. But overall, I started in lockdown, but it has been a long time coming, I guess.
Right, Cathy, I want to leave enough time for us to hear the song. I appreciate you speaking to us. Congratulations
on
this.
And I would like to tell your listeners we're coming to Donegal on Monday night to the Art Centre in Letterkenny.
Oh, beautiful. What a venue, yeah.
Yes, and I really look forward to it. It would be a live band, great band, with the illustrations being shown on the screen behind us. And people get to see the Cranky Box. And these little things will be available too. These are little small Cranky Boxes, which would have all the...
Do they actually play the melody?
A melody, yeah, for you.
Okay, wow. And there's a QR code on the rear, which brings you... Okay, excellent.
To the website, and then there'll be a Bandcamp link to where you can download the
Brilliant.
Music.
You've thought of everything. All right, lovely stuff. Cathy, thank you so very much. Have a lovely day.
Greg.
Take care. Bye-bye. Right, so here is Filan Runo.
Be you. Sleep.